Wegg had started a penny in, three to stay watch me game with Pickens and Strother. I thumped the table with one hand, scattering the matchsticks they were using as counters. Wegg, you'll accompany these men into the jail with the sheriff. It'll be a few minutes yet. There's a few more things to attend to.
What's in the jail?
Wegg asked, looking at the scattered matchsticks with some regret. I guess he'd been winning.
The boy, I suppose?
The boy and the end of this sorry business, I said, with more confidence than I felt. I took the graybeard by the elbow, gently, and pulled him aside. What's your name, Cy?
Steg Luka. What's it to you? You think I'm the one?
No, I said, and I didn't. No reason, just a feeling. But if you know which one it is, if you even think you know, you ought to tell me. There's a frightened boy in there, locked in a cell for his own good. He saw something that looked like a giant bear kill his father, and I'd spare him any more pain if I could. He's a good boy. He considered, then it was him who took my elbow, and with a hand that felt like iron. He drew me into the corner. I can't say, gunslinger, for we've all been down there, deep in the new plug, and we all saw it. Saw what? A crack in the salt, with a green light shining through. Bright, then dim, like a heartbeat. And it speaks to your face. I don't understand you. I don't understand myself. The only thing I know is we've all seen it and we've all felt it. It speaks to your face and tells you to come in. It's bitter. The light or the voice?
Both. It's of the old people, I've no doubt of that. We told Banderly, him that's the bull foreman, and he went down himself. Saw it for himself. Felt it for himself. But was he going to close the plug for that? Balls he was. He's got his own bosses to answer to, and they know there's a moit of salt left down there. So he ordered a crew to close it up with rocks, which they did. I know, because I was one of them. But rocks that are put in can be pulled out, and they have been, I'd swear to it. They were one way then, now they're another. Someone went in there, gunslinger, and whatever's on the other side, it changed him. But you don't know who.
Luca shook his head.
All I can say is it must have been between 12 o'clock and 6 in the morning, for then all's quiet.
Go back to your mates and say thank ye. You'll be drinking soon enough and welcome. But Cy Luca's drinking days were over. We never know, do we? He went back, and I surveyed them. Luca was the oldest by far. Most of the others were middle-aged, and a couple were still young. They looked interested and excited rather than afraid, and I could understand that. They'd had a couple of drinks to perk them up, and this made a change in the drudgery of their ordinary days. None of them looked shifty or guilty. None looked like anything more or less than what they were, salties in a dying mining town where the rails ended.
Jamie, I said, a word with you.
I walked him to the door and spoke directly into his ear. I gave him an errand and told him to do it as fast as ever he could. He nodded and slipped out into the stormy afternoon, or perhaps by then it was early evening.
Where's he off to? Wegg asked.
That's Nonny's to you, I said, and turned to the men with the blue tattoos on their ankles. Line up, if you please, oldest to youngest.
I don't know how old I am, do I? Said a balding man wearing a wrist clock with a rusty string-mended band.
Some of the others laughed and nodded. Just do the best you can, I said. I had no interest in their ages, but the discussion and argument took up some time, which was the main object. If the blacksmith had fulfilled his commission, all would be well. If not, I would improvise. A gunslinger who can't do that dies early. The miners shuffled around like kids playing when the music stops, swapping spots until they were in some rough approximation of age. The line started at the door to the jail and ended at the door to the street. Luca was first. Wrist clock was in the middle. The one who looked about my age, the one who'd said they were always afraid, was last. Sheriff, will you get their names? I asked. I want to speak to the Streeter boy. Billy was standing at the bars of the drunken disorderly cell.
He'd heard our palaver and looked frightened. "Is he here?" he asked. "The skin man?"
"I think so," I said, "but there's no way to be sure."
"Sigh, I'm a scared."
"I don't blame you, but the cell's locked and the bars are good steel. He can't get at you, Billy."
"You ain't seen him when he's a bear," Billy whispered.
His eyes were huge and shiny, fixed in place. I've seen men with eyes like that after they've been punched hard on the jaw. It's the look that comes over them just before their knees go soft. Outside, the wind gave a thin shriek along the underside of the jail roof. "Tim Stoutheart was afraid, too," I said, "but he went on. I expect you to do the same."
"Will you be here?"
"I, my mate Jamie, too." As if I had summoned him, the door to the office opened, and Jamie hurried in, slapping alkali dust from his shirt. The sight of him gladdened me. The smell of dirty feet that accompanied him was less welcome.
"Did you get it?" I asked.
"Yes, it's a pretty enough thing, and here's the list of names." He handed both over.
"Are you ready, son?" Jamie asked Billy.
"I guess so," Billy said. "I'm going to pretend I'm Tim Stoutheart."
Jamie nodded gravely. "That's a fine idea. May you do well." A particularly strong gust of wind blew past. Bitter dust puffed in through the barred window of the drunken disorderly cell. Again came that eerie shriek along the eaves. The light was fading, fading. It crossed my mind that it might be better, safer, to jail the waiting salties and leave this part for tomorrow. But nine of them had done nothing. Neither had the boy. Best to have it done, if it could be done, that was.
"Hear me, Billy," I said. "I'm going to walk them through nice and slow. Maybe nothing will happen."
All right."
His voice was faint. "Do you need a drink of water first, or to have a piss?"
"I'm fine," he said, but of course he didn't look fine. He looked terrified. "Sigh, how many of them have blue rings on their ankles?"
"All," I said.
"Then how?"
"They don't know how much you saw. Just look at each one as he passes, and stand back a little, do you?"
Out of reaching distance was what I meant, but I didn't want to say it out loud.
"What should I say?"
"Nothing. Unless you see something that sets off a recollection, that is."
I had little hope of that. "Bring them in, Jamie. Sheriff Peavy at the head of the line and Wegg at the end." He nodded and left. Billy reached through the bars. For a second, I didn't know what he wanted. Then I did. I gave his hand a brief squeeze.
"Stand back now, Billy, and remember the face of your father. He watches you from the clearing."
He obeyed. I glanced at the list, running over names, probably misspelled, that meant nothing to me, with my hand on the butt of my right-hand gun. That one now contained a very special load. According to Vannay, there was only one sure way to kill a skin man, with a piercing object of the holy metal. I had paid the blacksmith in gold, but the bullet he'd made me, the one that would roll under the hammer at first cock, was pure silver. Perhaps it would work. If not, I would follow with lead.